All right, the recorder is on. All right, good evening, everybody. We'll call tonight's June 13th, 2019 meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission to order. We'll start with roll call. This is Commissioner and Chair Gary Tau.
Commissioner McFarland.
Commissioner Miller.
Commissioner Holland.
Staff, both Mike McCarty and David Miller.
Welcome. So we know that Commissioner Greenberg is unavailable tonight. Commissioner Bovers was unavailable tonight. Hadn't heard from Susan yet, but is there a motion to excuse?
Susan,
she's
I
think here.
Oh, is she here? Are we okay? Awesome.
Right on the numbers.
All right, so we welcome.
Thank you.
We just went around, took roll. You want to announce your presence?
Commissioner Susan Ferguson.
Welcome. All right, now is there a motion to excuse our absent commissioners?
So moved.
The absent commissioners are Mr. Greenberg and Bowers.
Ms. Bowers. Have a motion to excuse. Is there a second?
There is a second, yes.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None opposed. Our commissioners, our absences are excused tonight. Next item is approval of tonight's agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda tonight?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I second.
Moved and seconded. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The agenda is approved. Next item is approval of the May 23rd Planning Commission meeting. Approval of the minutes of the May 23rd Planning Commission meeting. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor of approval of the May 23rd meeting, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Now it's an opportunity for public comment on any topic that is not on, that's not related to the public hearing tonight. So if you are here for our public hearing, please hold your comments until then. If you're here to talk about anything else, feel free. 2-3 minutes. Anybody have anything they wish to say on something unrelated to cannabis? All right, hearing none. We'll now move on to the public hearing. And this hearing tonight is regarding a potential development agreement between the City of North Bend and an applicant to allow marijuana retail at 320 Southwest Mountside Boulevard. I'll talk a little bit about the process we want to go through tonight for the public hearing. First, we're going to start with a staff introduction of the topic, which may include any comments that the applicant, who I understand is here tonight, may wish to make. These will be introductory and an overview and context in nature. At that time, we'll open up the public hearing. We have a sign-up sheet in the back of the room. If you do want to make comments tonight and you haven't already signed up, please do so. When we get to that point, we'll just go right off the sign-up sheet. People will have 3 to 5 minutes to make their comments or ask their questions. I would ask that any comments be related to the materials that are in the information packet or part of either the applicant's or the staff presentation tonight, and keep those focused on the matters that are really before us to decide and items that will be on the record. Let's see. When we do call your name, please state your name and your address so that we can get this on the record. We are tape recording tonight's meeting, so we want to make sure that we have a record. When the last person has spoken, there'll be an opportunity for either staff or the applicant to address any of the testimony, any questions or any comments that we've received in the public testimony. We'll then allow the commissioner's time to ask any questions of the public related to their testimony. At that time, we would typically then close the public hearing and move into deliberations. My understanding is we've received some fairly last-minute technical written testimony that requires a little bit more research and analysis and discussion. So we won't be closing the public hearing tonight. We'll be continuing the hearing to our next meeting, we believe, which will be in 2 weeks. We don't anticipate taking any action on the proposal that's before us tonight. It's our opportunity to hear from you, the public, an opportunity to ask questions, learn more about what's being proposed, and then we'll move to the next step of the process. All right, cover that adequately.
Thank you. So my name is Mike McCarty. I'm a senior planner with the city, and I'll provide just a very brief introduction to both the background of the regulations and what's called the development agreement before we get into your comment. So state of Washington, as you're, I'm sure, aware, allows the sale of marijuana retail under a license from the state when that business meets a number of locational and operational requirements, including minimum distances from certain what are considered sensitive uses, such as daycares, parks, schools, and some other things. In addition to that state license, a marijuana retail establishment also must be permitted by the local jurisdiction in which it's proposed under the issuance of a local business license. And in the case of the City of North Bend, the City of North Bend already does have regulations governing the sale of marijuana retail. And we do allow marijuana retail in certain locations. So currently the marijuana retail regulations allow a retail establishment at exit 31 within certain areas of our interchange mixed use, for our interchange commercial zone, when it meets certain buffering requirements. So something before the Planning Commission tonight is not the broader question of should we allow marijuana retail. That decision has already been made by allowing marijuana retail in other areas of the city. So their decision is more about the development agreement specifically, and is the proposed location an appropriate location, and are impacts of that location adequately mitigated? So the applicant is here with us tonight, Mr. Cliff Garrett. He's the owner of a marijuana retail business within the city of Issaquah, and is proposing to open up the location here if the city council approves the development agreement. So he approached the city last fall to give a little bit more background with an earlier proposal to locate a store at another property over on East North Bend Way. So the hearing for that was the very same night as Snowmageddon, and so we didn't wind up hearing from the public at that time. But then subsequent to that, Mr. Garrett decided to abandon that proposal. It involved a lot more complexity with the actual development of a store and site, a building, rather than just locating within an existing store. So there was more complication to that, and he abandoned that proposal. So he's back with a request to consider a development agreement for a location at 320 Southwest Mountside Boulevard. So that is within the existing Mountain Valley Center Shopping Center, where Safeway is. The specific location is the old liquor store, a portion of the old liquor store. So Mr. Garrett would divide the wall there with a demising wall to locate the retail store, and then rent out the other spaces within that 320 Southwest Mountside Boulevard just to other general retail uses. So the proposed location at the Mountain Valley Center does meet the state minimum buffering requirements from sensitive uses, but it's also outside the area that is currently allowed by the city under a marijuana retail zoning regulations, and therefore the request to consider this, especially through what's called the development agreement. So the state does allow cities to establish development agreements with individual applicants to establish standards and requirements for a specific proposal that are different or that might differ from provisions of the city's development regulations, subject to approval by the council. The city has regulations establishing what needs to be considered under a development agreement, essentially finding that approving that development agreement is in the best interest of the public. A development agreement has a number of advantages over what the alternative would be, which would be to rezone or to provide a change in the city's development regulations to allow the use more broadly. So a development agreement allows a trial basis for a particular use. It's a contractual agreement rather than a zoning allowance. So a zoning allowance, if you're to rezone to allow it more broadly, anyone could come in, and as long as they meet those minimum requirements, they have to be approved. A development agreement is contractual, so it's with one person at a time, and that allows us to evaluate the prospective applicant based on the merits of their current operations, and that's what we have done. So city staff have discussed with the city of Issaquah staff and police to consider Mr. Garrett's current operations and have found no evidence of any problems with the operation or increased crime or other problems related with the current operation. So other advantages of a development agreement is that it allows the city to impose additional requirements and limitations above and beyond what we could do just applying our existing zoning regulations or the state's marijuana regulations. So that could be things like hours of operation, additional signage requirements, security requirements, and other mitigation requirements to address impacts to the city. That development agreement still has to go through the public process, which is a big part of why we're here tonight. We want to hear from the public of whether or not the public feels this is a good idea before the Planning Commission considers that and recommends it to the council. So it's in no way a means of bypassing the regulations to allow the use. So one of the things that we want to consider with a development agreement is what are the potential impacts and benefits of doing that so that the council can find that it's in the best interest of the public. Touch on a few of those. So just as we would with a development or a municipal code amendment, you want to consider what are the impacts, potential impacts to the environment, to adjacent properties, to traffic, and other things so that you can find that the public interest is met. In this case, it's just within an existing building, so there's not going to be environmental impacts aside from what any other retail use establishing within an existing building would be. Potential economic impacts, so the city would stand to benefit financially from this. We would receive additional sales tax revenue from the sale of marijuana within our jurisdiction. And our proceeds are not based on a direct proceeds from the sale of the marijuana, but it's actually through a state, a complicated formula from the state called the state shared revenue formula. So if you allow marijuana retail within your jurisdiction, within your development regulations, you get a share of the overall state pot of revenue collected from marijuana retailers. And we already do. We allow marijuana as a use within our jurisdiction, so we receive currently about $10,000 a year for that. What it does in addition is those jurisdictions that actually have a retail store within their jurisdiction get an additional share, and this is where we'll bring additional revenue to the city. So our finance director and the applicant have both estimated this, and the anticipated proceeds would be somewhere between $100,000 and $150,000 a year to the city from this, for allowing the marijuana retail to actually locate in the city. Potential traffic impacts. Marijuana retail uses are fairly popular uses in terms of bringing additional traffic. So the applicant has submitted an estimate in their CEPA checklist that the use will likely generate about 405 trips per day, assuming a 2,000 square foot store. That is located closer to I-90 than the prior location, so that traffic is primarily going to be focused out in the existing commercial retail area close to I-90. However, to mitigate for traffic impacts to the city, they will be providing through the development agreement a mitigation fee of $25,000 annually to the city's general fund to address traffic improvements over time. Impacts to adjacent properties. So this is kind of one of the more important things for the Planning Commission to consider. So what are the positive and negative impacts of this use? 320 Southwest Mountside Boulevard is a struggling retail area. There have been a lot of vacancies over time in that. It's gone through receivership, and we are looking for a use that will bring additional revenue to both the city and to generate additional economic development. We even have a comp plan policy that speaks to underperforming retail centers and trying to find ways to assist those to bring in additional revenue for those retailers and for the city. Impacts to other adjacent properties beyond the retail center itself are not really anticipated because it's, again, within the context of an existing retail center. You're just looking at the storefronts next to other storefronts, and the entrance to that retail center is next to an arterial. The storefront doesn't face towards residential areas, so we don't anticipate impacts to nearby residential areas. One thing that we did receive, the Planning Commission's got the full record of comments received as of the time of the packet delivered, and we did receive two comments after the packet was delivered, which I provided in the Planning Commission's desk. One of those comments was a comment from the other property owner within the Mountain Valley Center, speaking to concerns about the covenants, conditions, and restrictions applicable to the center. Those are not a city regulation, that's a private agreement for the users within the center. They are concerned about the use not being allowed by those CCNRs, and so that's the reason for continuing the hearing. The applicant wishes to have additional time to talk with that other property owner and work that out before coming back to the Planning Commission for closing that, they're continuing and then closing the hearing and the Planning Commission deliberating on that.
Just as a matter of clarification, CCNRs are private agreements between private parties, not regulated by the city. The city has no authority or involvement in those, so that's a simple matter for them to work out. It's not a regulatory issue that we can touch.
Social concerns. So I think there's going to be just naturally residents that do not like the idea of marijuana retail within their community. And we'll hear from the public tonight what the public has to say in attendance. The advantage of this site, again, so the Planning Commission's consideration is not about whether we'd allow marijuana broadly. That's already been decided. We do allow marijuana in certain areas. So the Planning Commission should consider, is this an appropriate location for the use? And in this case, this is a much better location than the prior proposed location that was earlier considered, and that this is in an existing commercial area where there's a lot of commercial activity. Traffic impacts are not coming through primarily residential areas, and it's a little bit less visible to the community as a whole being out in the commercial area. So school buses aren't regularly going by this location. It's a little bit further removed across the river from most of the town. Security and operational concerns. So there might be concerns about the potential for code violations or increased shoplifting or objectionable activities that might occur that require attention of law enforcement. But again, we've provided some additional requirements on top of the minimum state requirements regarding hours of operation, regarding security, also, again, examine the applicant and their record with the city of Issaquah to find out if there were concerns warranted from that, and did not find a reason to be concerned about that. So let me turn it back to the chair of the Planning Commission.
Just one comment before. If I were a member of the public, I'd probably ask the question, why are we doing a development agreement? Kind of a little bit more than what Mike asked, because potentially this person could come to a location that's currently allowed and they could go there. And the council also could amend our zoning code to allow more sites to be available. They didn't want to do that. They didn't want to open up the playing field. They wanted to say, this is the kind of use that we want to control and we want to have specific regulations for, therefore, we're not going to let it proliferate in any place that would be allowed beyond what we currently have, which is the more restrictive law that formerly existed. And they want to restrict it and to be able to control it. So they opted not to change the code to match the state law and to stay with a more restrictive version of where it's allowed, and then to be able to regulate that more carefully than they would be if they opened it up. So that's just a clarifier as to why the state laws are different than our code, and we have the legislative authority to do that.
Thank you. Okay. Mike, did you want to include any comments from the applicant in this introduction?
Yeah, I think it'd be good to offer the applicant an opportunity to speak to their proposal.
Sure.
Sure. I think Mike.
Can you state your name and address for the record?
Yes, absolutely. Clifford Garrett, 8809 Northeast 10th Street, Penang, Washington. So the proposal, as Mike described, is to go into the former liquor store portion of it. It's to construct a wall down the middle, partition the existing space into two, take one of the spaces and operate it as a licensed Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board regulated retail marijuana store. Pretty straightforward. I don't have too much more to add, but I believe I have opportunity to respond to comments afterwards.
Yes, you do. Okay. Yes. Thank you very much. All right, at this point, we will open up the public hearing. So far, we have just two members of the audience that have signed up to attend. Is there anybody else that has arrived that would like to add their name to the list? Okay, I will call you up in the order that you've signed in. I'll just remind you, please limit your time to 3 to 5 minutes and keep your comments or your questions as close to the topic and the specifics of the application and the development agreement that's in front of us. So with that, the first...
if I can just add a clarifying statement, too. There's extra copies of the packet over on the table there, and I've got a few extra here if anybody would like to see the specifics of the development agreement. Got that available.
Thanks, Mike. Rick Wiltshire, and please, again, state your name and your address. I know we have it on the sign-up sheet, but for the recording.
You can ask questions? Is that what this is?
You can't. Yeah, it's both. You can ask questions, but your questions won't be answered until we've concluded all the public comments. Yeah. All right.
Rich Wiltshire, 249 Bendigo Boulevard, South. So the $150,000 that potentially we could get, what fund does that go into? $25,000 goes into the general fund for roads. The general fund is kind of tricky. Where does the $150,000 money go? In here, it's also talking about a cement wall that has to separate between the separate retail, the different retail. Does that mean the current wall is the current wall between the two, say, his neighbor retail on either side, cement, or is he going to have to rebuild to put a cement wall in there? And oh, and is there, that's how I see this. So if you have a retail establishment and you have alarms on there, and there, you have a certain number of alarms you can have, like 911 stuff, right? Is there going to be something like that, for example, does the crime go up? Does that mean there's an out to say, okay, you're done, we're not doing this anymore? Things like that. And I know that's, it's just a question to ask. I'm not saying I'm for or against it right now. It's just questions that I've been thinking about. That's really all right.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm just making a note here. All right. Next member of the audience that signed up is Tim Williams. Tim, if you don't mind, again, restating your name and your address.
So, Tim Williams, President and CEO of Snowballs Credit Union. We're at 320 Belside right now, also over in Socoing. We come at this from a different perspective. We definitely support small businesses and entrepreneurship and want to grow the valley. However, we have the luxury of being regulated by two separate regulators, state level and federal level. So, we had our state examiners in our offices for 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, and they brought up a real concern for us with this transaction. We're regulated by the federal regulators because of our member deposit insurance, and if we have a landlord that's in the cannabis business, which is not legal on the federal level, that puts us in real harm's way. So it's going to directly affect our business because 70% of our membership in deposits are in North Bend. In Mountside Boba is our busiest branch. So it's going to directly affect us because we're not going to be able to lease space from a marijuana business from our federal regulators. So that's our approach to this thing. We don't have any problems if there's a marijuana business down the block from us, three doors down, but if our landlord is a marijuana business, that creates real issues for us. And it's going to directly affect our business.
Thank you. there anybody else that would like to speak on this topic?
Can I ask one more?
Just to make sure there isn't anybody else that...
Will there be time for questions after?
This is the time for questions. But we will provide answers to the questions once we've heard all of the questions from the members of the public. Would you like to?
Yeah. Okay. My name is Lorraine Hallam, and I live at 1241 Northeast 89, Seattle, Washington. And I think you mentioned that there would be some additional security regulations placed upon the potential of use. I'd like to understand what that means, what that looks like, and
We can go into that afterwards.
Okay. Anybody else? Mike?
Yeah.
So the applicant wants to take these questions?
Let me give it a start here. So Mr. Wilcher asked a question about where does the $150,000 go into, what fund? That's actually a question for our finance director. We don't have, that's not established in the development agreement. So that could be a question that we bring back to you. I'm presuming that it would go to the general fund unless there's something specific. The next question was about the cement wall. So what the intent of that is, and that is one of the security provisions. That would be a demising wall, which separates two retail spaces. One of the walls is the exterior wall of the building. So the other wall, which would be the demising wall between the marijuana retail and the other future commercial space, would be that cement or concrete block wall. And the intent of that is with marijuana retail, that's a big cash business. There's a lot of cash on hand at any one point. So there is the potential for break-in. And what we understand happens sometimes is somebody will break into another adjacent business that might have less security, and they'll go through the wall because the wall is often just sheetrock and it's easy to break through that. So that concrete block cement demising wall is a security provision. If crime goes up, what do we do? So that is one of the big advantages of a development agreement specifically. So that is, again a contractual arrangement between the city and the applicant specifically. So if the applicant fails to meet any of those terms of the development agreement, we can cancel that development agreement and the applicant would have to close the business. The development agreement also has an expiration date that at the end of 10 years, the agreement terminates unless otherwise renewed by the city and the applicant. So that provides a little bit more of a certainty that we're evaluating this. How was it? How did it go? So if there are security issues, that could be addressed through additional provisions in the development agreement in a future phase.
But the council does have the ability to terminate the agreement because it's a contract. So if the contract is perceived to be violated, then you can terminate it, in which case the business would have to vacate the premises. And that is the most extreme thing we could do. Yeah, but we do have measures within a development agreement to return to the table. And if we think there are other provisions that would be take care of the problem, those can be amended, become a part of the agreement, and it's readopted and has to be re-signed.
Let's see, what was the other question? The Snowfalls Credit Union, I think that is just an impact that the Planning Commission and the Council are going to have to consider. What are the impacts to the tenants because of the relationship of the marijuana retail and the federal prohibition on it versus the state allowance? It's a rather complicated situation. Security provisions in the DEA, so I can go into those a little bit more. The concrete demising wall was one of them. Another provision that's, so these are provisions that go up above and beyond what the state requirements are. The state's got a number of security provisions applicable to marijuana retail. This is in addition to that. So we require that the applicant remove cash from the premises each day so that there's not that buildup of cash on hand that would be an attraction to potential criminal activity. Let me look at some other things here. So another other thing is transparency of the storefront. We want to make sure that there is visibility into the store so that they're not covering it over with signage and whatnot so that you can see what's going on above eye level in, into the store. Also a requirement that they provide some form of security beyond... And then limiting the further limiting the hours of operation. So rather than be able to go until, I can't remember, Mr. Garrett, you might recall, is it midnight or
it limits
under state
it
law?
10 p.m. under state law. I'm limited to midnight. So 8 a.m. To midnight is state law.
State law, yeah. So we're further limiting the time that the business can operate to reduce noise and activity and potential security concerns later in the evening.
A few other the development agreement provisions that might be of interest to the public is we're limiting the kind of signage they could have, no parish signs, no large, you know, marijuana leaf or the kinds of things that you know, would kind of detract from the quality of the community. So the method in which you advertise your signage is controlled. We didn't want to see some establishments in areas that are already a crime problem. Quite often we'll have armed guards outside. We don't want that. We want their security to be internal. So we really would like to see any businesses that come into the community to not have a negative impact on other businesses or the general public. So we're really trying to contain and have a very low-key type of operation rather than something that's garish and just out of character with our community.
Thank you. Mike, maybe I missed this. I think Mr. Wiltshire also asked a question about the construction and the mizing wall or the concrete wall. Did you answer that?
Yeah.
It's okay, so we got that one.
So at your discretion, there was a hand that came back up from the Snow Falls Credit Union.
Yeah.
Well, one additional question on the security measures. Granted, you're requiring the marijuana business to remove all of their cash at night. That's impossible for us to do. And we keep a lot of cash in our branches overnight. So we don't have the luxury to move cash every night. You know, that's not even feasible.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. All right. Planning Commission, commissioners, any questions that you may have either for staff, the applicant, or any of the members of the public that commented tonight?
Chair, I've got a couple questions. One for one of the public.
Okay.
But maybe you might want to invite the police captain to comment if he has anything to comment. And otherwise, I'll move on to my question for.
I really don't. I can address a little bit, like you had talked about alarms and stuff like that. The city, actually, it's going before next week's council, an amendment to the false alarm reporting program that since we just renewed our another 5-year contract from Snoqualmie doing law enforcement for North Bend, prior to that, North Bend handled their own false alarm program as far as like fees and giving out notifications. We are now going to be taking that over, billing and notifications. So next week, like I say, the new amended false alarm ordinance is going to go before council. I'm sure there'll be no issues with it. We mirror a lot of what municipal codes that we do in Snoqualmie, in North Bend, and vice versa, so that our officers don't have to try and remember, okay, what goes on in Snoqualmie, what goes on in North Bend. So it's basically one of those things where you get like 1-3B and then it kind of goes progressive for fines up to a certain point, and then there could be a point in which there's a suspension for a calendar, rest of the calendar year. And that's pretty standard what we've used in many, many communities, kind of have that same thought process in their ordinances. As far as mayor, I have not worked in a jurisdiction that has had a marijuana store. However, I have, you know, I used to work for Redmond for 20 years, and they have them now, and they're talking with my my friends over there. There hasn't really been any issues. Also talked with a lot of my friends that work for Issaquah PD. You haven't generated any issues for them that have, you know, gone to a high level on a radar. So I really have nothing to draw from for saying yay or nay to that type of establishment. So.
And just for the record, could we get your name and your position?
Sure. Nick Alfus, Captain, Snoqualmie Police.
Thank you very much. And Mike, David, just procedural in terms of creating the record and generating the documentation of the public hearing, maybe the captain's comments could be part of the staff's response to the questions that came up. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much. All right, well.
For our Snow Falls Credit Union friends, our state charter, federal charter?
State
charter.
Federal charter.
Yes. And did the regulator actually provide, I'm assuming it was CUNA?
No, this was the state DFI.
State DFI, okay. So the
state of credit union.
Yes, so they, okay, so they were the one who brought the concern. So was that in the form of saying that you would be in violation?
Or no, just that was in the form they were doing our 18-month examination and looking at our plans and where we were and what was going on. So they said you should consult legal counsel and maybe talk to the NCUA about potential issues that could be down the line for you.
And are you in that process or you didn't?
We talked to our attorney, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Can we just get a clarification? DFI refers to?
Department of Financial Institutions for the State of Washington.
Okay, thank you.
And basically, they recommended that if the transaction goes through and the marijuana business becomes the owners of the complex, then we got to find them.
So their finding was that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That's.
Yep.
Thanks for the clarification. That's all I had on that.
Okay. Any other commissioners? Questions?
Yes.
Sorry, Mayor. Thanks, Susan.
Excuse me. Susan Ferguson, Commissioner. I have a question. The organization that's doing the marijuana business is also going to be leasing out other units. Is it going to have a different LLC for renting out, or?
Exactly. So the marijuana business is not going to own the shopping complex. So right now, the purchase agreement is signed by me as an individual and or assigns, meaning that when I close on the transaction, it would be a separate LLC that is owned and controlled by me that does nothing other than real estate investment. So there's no cannabis business that they would give money to when they're paying rent. So the premise is 100% incorrect.
Just one clarification on that. That is very true. However, if the marijuana business gets sideways with the state and the federal authorities come in and seize property and equipment, they're going after all of the owners of that business and all of their assets, not just a separate LLC. So that's the quandary that we're in.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Thank you for your comments, everybody. Appreciate that. And that gives me further things to think about, of course, all of us here. And none of this is an easy decision. You all should know that, I think. So anyway, one of the questions I had is more to staff is, where are the other ideas of where this operation could be located in the city, within the city?
Well, very likely you'll hear them because there are other people interested.
Yeah.
And that's why the DA is being used to kind of limit the impact on the community. But could you map-wise kind of explain where the areas are that the ordinance does?
If you look at the purple on the map up there, the purple at exit 31 is the area that currently allows marijuana retail when it also meets those minimum state buffering requirements. So that's largely the outlet mall, and then the gas stations just fronting right to, Southwest Mountside Boulevard here.
So I can just thank you for the clarification for all of us on the public session.
Okay. Anything else, Mike?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Any other questions from commissioners? If not, I do
have more. I was trying to give everyone a chance first.
And I had a couple too, so, but go ahead, Rob.
I had a question for staff or the applicant, whoever confessed to answer. Are there only two owners of the Mountain Valley Center or more?
And only two owners or more.
So I think technically I believe that it's four LLCs, but it's controlled by two entities, correct?
I know half of it's one entity, one LLC.
I have one half of the shopping center under contract. It's my understanding that the Zemp family owns the rest of the center.
That's correct. I don't know if I can answer.
Is there a way to verify that?
Yeah.
Through staff process. Okay.
So all of the current owners of all of the portions of the Mountain Valley Center were notified of this hearing. So I don't know who those are specifically, but they were notified.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll kind of state what I was getting at so staff could maybe look into that for the continuance, which was the letter we received from JVSL. Does that represent 50%? 100% mm-hmm. of the other owners, but beyond the applicant, what percentage of the ownership was around that? So that's what I was trying to get to.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
There you
okay.
go.
Thank you.
Do you mind providing your name and address just for the record for providing that information?
I knew that was coming. Yes, it's Sid, S-I-D, Sevier, S-E-V-E-R-E, 2212.
168th Avenue, Northeast Bellevue, Washington 98008. And do you represent the other owner? Or?
No, I work with the bank.
Okay.
Well, SB31 LLC owns the section that Mr. Garrett is currently.
I'm good. Thanks.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. Thank you for including the revenue distribution procedure. Can you just add some further clarification? Because I was struggling with how we get through that tiered formula from $10,000 a year to $100,000 to $150,000. Per year, which of those tiers that you described in the packet directs those that 10 or 15 fold increase towards the city of North Bend?
So the applicant is probably more familiar than myself on that issue.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't mind.
Sure. Can you repeat the question?
Well, so in the packet, there's a description of the state allocation of marijuana revenues, and there's a tiered aspect of it. So right now, the city of North Bend receives a little over $10,000 a year, but this proposal is estimating it would generate $100,000 to $150,000 per year in revenue for the city of North Bend, and I'm just trying to understand how in this allocation process or in these tiers do we get that much more directed here to the city of North Bend as a result of your 2,000 square foot store.
Got it. As it relates to the tiers of distribution, I'm not going to be able to speak in that level of detail. However, the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board every year releases a list of distributions of marijuana excise tax revenue. Broken down by jurisdiction, and so it has every single city in Washington that has stores allocated to it, and in addition to counties, and then it lists the amount distributed to each jurisdiction. So I believe that City of Issaquah generated about $90,000 in excise tax revenue alone last year, and then there's the sales tax revenue that's generated on top of that, which is a substantial amount. And so I know that Issaquah's sales tax is higher than North Bend, so I know that the distribution is higher, but it's, and forgive me for not having these numbers committed to memory, but it would be a substantial amount of unallocated revenue that would go to North Bend in the way of sales tax revenue as well.
David, I might be able to help a little bit. I know that if you don't, if your zoning completely prohibits it,
mm-hmm.
you don't share.
Understood that.
If you've zoned for it, I think you're at the first tier.
Yeah.
So you get some money.
Right.
If you actually have a facility, then the amount of business in terms of dollar volume that the business does takes you to the third tier, and that's where we get to the 150.
Okay. So doing, we don't have to do that math tonight, but I think it would help strengthen the record to show that paper trail of how we get to that amount based on the City of North Bend's tax rates. What kind of revenue would be expected to generate $90,000 to $140,000 in additional revenue to the city?
Mm-hmm.
And then just a question, this may be a mundane question, but as Mary said, there's a lot of different factors here. So in the record, you're estimating, Mr. Garrett, approximately 400 trips. Is a trip somebody actually walking through the door of your store?
I believe that the trips data was calculated by my architect using the ITE. Manual based on the use and then the standard number of trips based upon that use. And so it's based on a manual that's released every year.
But what's a trip, I guess? What I'm trying to
get to. An automobile trip to and from establishment.
Okay.
And we use most cities in the country do traffic studies to assess what the impact will be. And the ITE manual is, it's the International Association of Transportation Engineers. So they put together what various types of uses, on average, produce for daily trips. And this is a daily trip. So if you have 403 trips a day, that's 403 cars going in and out of the center for this destination.
Okay.
And what you usually do, and it may not work for this use, but what you usually do is the peak hour trips are 10% of the average daily. Because, and the reason they do that is because peak hour trips are generally in commute times. And so if you have 20,000 cars a day on the street, your peak hour is going to be 10% of that. And that's typically the way you calculate traffic impact. Now, what we also allow people to do is if they believe that their trip generation is substantially different from what the ITE manual says, and they have an existing business, they can do trip counts and have their engineering, a certified traffic engineer, do the trip counts and submit an actual trip count as opposed to basing it on a manual.
Right. Okay. So the trips are vehicles, they're not people necessarily.
Right.
There could be multiple people in those vehicles.
Right.
So again, back to Mr. Garrett. And the reason I'm asking the question, kind of coming at it from that standpoint, is a big part of the justification, I think, is an economic justification that by allowing the development agreement, making changes to our zoning, or making an exception to our zoning to allow for not just a business, but this particular business, your company, I'm trying to understand how do we arrive at those financial projections. So what can you share that would give us an indication of a 2,000 square foot store with your hours of operation. I'm not asking you to disclose your revenue numbers. That may not be appropriate, but I am trying to understand if 400 vehicles are arriving, there's going to be multiple people in some of those vehicles. What kind of traffic do you have in your store, and kind of what's your, may not be the right term, but sort of what's your capture rate? How many of those people actually come in, purchase something, and what that average transaction might look like?
Absolutely. So to the number of trips, I would have to do some research. The revenue numbers are publicly disclosed, so I can share them here. Every month I do anywhere between 700 and 800,000 in revenue, and that kind of gives you a data point for estimating sales here. And because of course that number equates directly with excise tax revenue and expected sales tax revenue, and that's out of a store that's 2,602 square feet, so very similar size. And
this is Issaquah.
Yeah, this is Issaquah. Okay. Exactly. And in Issaquah, it's an anomaly. I mean, one can look at kind of similar areas where where there are stores with that are on along major highways and so on and so forth. I'm thinking, namely, like Auburn or Des Moines, and they post similar sales numbers by store as well. And so, I think that's a good data point to use as a reference point.
The 700,000 to 800,000. I'm sorry. What was it? Monthly?
Monthly. Yeah.
Monthly.
Commissioner Colin, I have a question. So your Issaquah store, is that a standalone shop? You're not in a shopping mall?
Not in a shopping mall.
But it's all by itself?
It's a, technically it's a multi-tenant building, but yes, it's, there's one retail space in the building.
Okay. A couple other questions. I guess first one I'll direct back to you again, Mr. Garrett, if you don't mind. And part of the rationale, I think, that we've in context here is our current zoning has proven problematic in actually siting a facility. Can you describe any activities that you've pursued trying to locate your business in an area in our city that is zoned to allow this type of use?
Certainly. So I've scoured every single parcel that's in the purple there, and I have, this goes back to, I believe, 2015 when the original zoning laws were passed here, and, or maybe even 2014, I forget exactly the date, and really kind of hit a wall, and there are very few property owners that control all of the parcels in that purple area, and most of them have loans from federally chartered and federally insured banks, and so generally speaking, people who have bank financing through federally chartered banks will not lease data to cannabis business. Now there are state chartered credit unions such as Salal Credit Union and others that lend to the 502 industry, and they don't have any problem with campus businesses, but of course they also charge more.
Mm-hmm. Last question I have, and towards the City of North Bend's comprehensive plan, because again, part of the rationale is this furthers some economic goals that the city has. We've kind of talked about language that aligns. So I get that, but I guess I would look for something a little stronger, at least for the record, that kind of points towards this business trying to justify us going to kind of the unique step of a development agreement and making a zoning exception. So do we have any data that sort of indicates that this is a untapped opportunity or underserved area?
Yeah, we do have the two policies in the economic development element that do speak. Nothing speaks in the comprehensive plan about marijuana retail specifically, but there are two policies in the economic development element that talk about supporting underutilized commercial areas, finding ways to. I can read those directly if you'd like.
No, I know those are in there, mm-hmm. But underutilized is. It could be an objective fact, or it could be a subjective opinion that something is fully utilized or underutilized. I'm looking for something that indicates vacant storefront.
We can look a little further, but I think although you don't have the tool in this state, there are many states that have adopted enabling legislation for redevelopment. Mm-hmm. And the reason they've done it is because of blight. And primarily, we're finding blight in the marketplace today is in retail centers. And why is that? Online shopping. And the changing nature of retail. Retail has become much more entertainment-oriented. And if centers aren't designed to attract that kind of business, then they don't survive. And I think we can look a little further, but I think the nexus is very clear that underutilized means vacant spaces, which translates into a much lower performing economy that is an anomaly given our incomes and our opportunities here. And sometimes that's due to not keeping up with the times and not repurposing the center and making it more attractive. Sometimes it's a factor of management. And I've developed shopping centers for several years before I got back into this business. And I think underutilized means that you have a vacancy that's in excess of 10%, which you usually pro forma as a worst case. So when we look at these policies that deal with underutilized, what we want is highly performing assets for the benefit of the community because they recycle that money into their own upkeep. And obviously, you're going to have more goods and services if you have more spaces.
Right. I kind of struggle with the public policy aspect of the city's role in trying to stimulate improved utilization versus business owners and property owners that have not made investment in their properties, and so now it comes down to the city of North Bend making an exception to try and give a shot in the arm to both our tax base.
We're getting into another cycle of our update of our comprehensive plan.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you generally you do things like surveying the public and seeing what the issues are that they don't feel are being addressed. Mm-hmm. And then you do your own surveys of saying what are the areas in our community that need public policy strengthening in order to make a better community out of what we have. And I'm quite sure that that would be addressed because we've had any number of tenants come to us and say, gee, we'd sure like to locate out there, but there are reasons why we won't.
Right.
And so we are an economic development as well as a community development department. So we are charged with trying to keep the economic health of the community moving. As a matter of fact, right now where we have sewer plant limitations, we went to the council and said, please reserve capacity for commercial. And the reason for that was we have a long list of people that are approved of subdivisions and another 400 units in the pipe there. And we do not have a good job housing balance at build-out of that particular inventory, nor do we have a strong enough general fund to be able to provide the same level of services in the future that we do today.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very interested in economic development. And single family doesn't pay for itself. 70% of our general fund comes from commercial development. So there is a nexus here, and we'll search a little more in the document to try to respond a little more positively to your concern.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is very, very definitely the thread of reasoning that we're hearing from our council. There have been a lot of comments about making that center perform better.
Good. Thanks, Dave. Excellent. Any final questions or comments? Mike, I guess the only thing that I would ask, we're going to continue the public hearing, so I'll be asking for a motion to do so here in a moment. But I think in terms of continuing to build the record, I think many of the answers that we've received to the questions, both from staff as well as additional clarifying comments from members of the public, it would be very helpful to make sure all of that gets into the record.
We can provide some general findings in the staff report that
exactly,
clarify. Exactly,
I think as close to verbatim as, mm-hmm. as possible. Impractical. So I think there's some really good information that's been shared, and I think it's going to become the foundation for whatever decision direction we go with this in terms of also advising City Council on the Planning Commission's position on it. So the more that record is robust and detailed and comprehensive.
Yeah. And can I just to that add specifically, it would be great to get from St. Paul's data, you know, submittal for the record, that'd be great.
Yes. All right. So as we mentioned at the beginning, we are going to keep the public hearing open, which I...
Mr. Chair, point of order, I think we need a date certain. Do you have a date for us?
Yeah. That's a question for the applicant. Do you feel like the next Planning Commission meeting in 2 weeks is enough time for you to have conversations with the other owners of the shopping center?
I should have resolution then. I will let you know as soon as possible, if not.
For the purposes of the way that the Planning Commission operates, it must continue to a date certain. So if you need some more time, that's not a problem. But the public needs to know when it will come to hearing again, and that's why the date's certain.
Understood.
If you'd like a month, we can do that. If you'd like 2 weeks, we can do that.
Let's do a month then.
Okay, good. So that would be the first meeting in the next month, which would be, let me look on my calendar.
I'm betting it won't be July 4th.
No.
11th?
11th looks like the next.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
The Planning Commission meeting.
Yep, I think you're right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion that we continue the public hearing on the development agreement to allow marijuana retail at 320 Southwest Mountside Boulevard until Thursday, July 11th, Planning Commission meeting.
Is there a second?
There's a second.
And just for the record, I'm pretty sure it'll be here. We're going to be moving into the new city hall quite soon, but the closer we get to the performance date, the more we scratch our heads, so I think we'll be here on the 11th.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to continue the public hearing to Thursday, July the 11th. Any discussion amongst the commissioners before we vote? One point of clarification, by keeping the public hearing open, it preserves the opportunity for anybody who's here tonight to submit any additional comments or testimony.
Correct.
For the record. So,
it would be beneficial for those who want it in the record,
yes,
to submit it in writing, particularly if we hadn't heard from the credit union before.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to get some of those comments in writing.
Take the vote for the comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that when we make the vote, that the public understands that they still have an opportunity to submit.
Yeah.
All right, all those in favor?
I want to offer one clarification for myself.
Sure.
I'm going to be on vacation at that time, but David Miller has generously offered to continue that for me. So I think we'll work that out, but comments should be submitted to David Miller and not myself so that we don't miss something while I'm away.
Good point. All right, there's a motion to extend the public hearing to Thursday, July 11th. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. And we'll resume this topic July the 11th. I also want to echo Mary's comments. Thank you all so much for being here tonight. For those of you that made comments, asked questions, answered questions, I appreciate your interest in the topic and willingness to devote your time to this process. Thank you very much. Do we have any further business tonight?
No.
All right. Well, I think then we're ready to adjourn. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor of adjourning? Raise your hand, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I won't be here on the 11th, so.
Okay.
I sent an email, but I just got.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
Thank you all.
Okay.
So, yeah,
thanks, everybody.
All right. So, meeting is adjourned.
Meeting is adjourned.
I still object to being able to.